and Apostolic Church.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. My guest today is a nationally known pro-life leader, a very good friend of mine for many years, for which I am thankful, but also a pro-life leader who's made a difference, with her sheer persistence, with her very amiable and winning style, and for her courage. Her name is Marjorie Dannenfelser. She is the founder and president of the Susan B. Anthony List, which she founded in 22 years ago in 1992 and has grown to nearly 400,000 members nationwide. There are many highlights of those 22 years that I could give you, but I think the most important to mention is that under her leadership and the leadership of those I'm sure she will most generously mention on her board and her supporters, almost 100 pro-life candidates have been elected to the House of Representatives, 13 to the Senate, 15 to other statewide offices, and I'm relatively sure those aren't the latest statistics, but I'm going to give what I found. She has also worked on various pro-life legislation. She appears on all the talk shows from O'Reilly to Fox to EWTN. She's written for Weekly Standard, The Hill, Human Events, The Washington Post. She's been quoted everywhere. Newsmax calls her one of the most influential 25 Republican women in the United States. Newsweek, one of the top 10 leaders of the Christian right. But I will tell you that Marjorie Dannenfelser does not come across as your typical leader of the Christian right. She lives in Arlington, Virginia, with her husband Marty and their five kids. Marjorie, welcome to Church and Culture.
What a blessing to be on, and what a generous introduction. Thank you, Deal.
Oh, I could have been much more generous, and it would have been all perfectly true. Now, what a lot of people I don't think know about Susan B. Anthony List, they know it's a pro-life organization. But, you know, a lot of pro-life organizations, you know, they educate. They may advocate legislation and so forth, or they may oppose legislation, but you created an organization that actually tries to elect people to office. That's a huge difference between and you and other organizations, right?
It is. And it's radically different. And in the beginning, so many people that I consulted with said it couldn't and maybe even shouldn't be done. And when I say that, I mean that on the left, we saw great powerhouses and political machines electing pro-abortion women, almost all Democratic, and Emily's List being number one. And so as a consequence of that, we'd see woman after woman after woman claiming to speak for all women. And there's nothing more frustrating than that. Well, maybe there's a few things, but I would put that up in the top category. If you are a woman who is pro-life, and especially if you are advocating for life, and on Capitol Hill, this is what I saw. I was the director of the Pro-Life Women's Caucus, and it was very simple. We have got to have at least critical mass of women up standing on the other side of the Barbara Boxers and the Patricia Schroeders and the et cetera, all those women saying, no, you do not speak for me, Nancy Pelosi. You don't speak for the church, and you certainly don't speak for unborn children. I do. And let me tell you what the gift of life is and what women are made of, and you underestimate us and our generosity. So the idea was elect these women, and we have, in fact, done that over time. And as you elect and form those bonds, those relationships, those, and helping form them as great leaders and articulate leaders, you also have better ability to press for legislation that we think can actually be passed and save lives. So it's all of a piece, beginning with the electoral piece. Gotten a bad name, politics and electoral politics, but it certainly can be redeemed, and the founders were the first people to say it is a noble and just way to address human rights abuses in our country, and we should be using those tools that they gave us.
Well, you certainly have. I know that in your most recent dinner, you have an annual dinner in Washington. You had well over 500 people and numerous members of Congress, Senate. Mention to our audience just the kind of folks who showed up to say a few words at the annual dinner.
Well, it was probably most of the senators that you love the most. Two of the women that we helped elect to the Senate were Senator Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, Senator Deb Fischer from Nebraska, Senator Cruz came, Senator Mike Lee from Utah, and Senator Graham, Lindsey Graham, who is our Senate sponsor of the pain-capable 5-month pregnancy ban, or abortion ban, sorry. And so it, those plus a flock of the women that we helped elect to the U.S. House of Representatives, who are the women who really took a historic stand, fought hard for that 20-week pain-capable bill, and passed it in a truly historic moment. Those women took to the floor. The woman was in the speaker's chair. A woman managed the bill. It was an all-woman cast in arguing the bill. And on the other side, they were just simply flat-footed. Nancy Pelosi did not know what to say.
I'm talking with Marjorie Dannenfeltzer, the founder and president of the Susan B. Anthony List, about the unique work that her organization does among many other good pro-life organizations, that is getting people elected. Now, how hard was it to convince, say, the pro-life community that a politically engaged, on-the-ground organization could actually work as a pro-life group?
Well, I think that the hardest group of people to convince were some of our initial donors who had been giving and supporting the pro-life movement in many other ways that they continued to, that were very important. The idea that women should be special and unique leaders in this as elected officials was a little bit of a hard sell, not because there was misogyny going on, but really it hadn't been tested.
Right.
And there was a sense of, I'm not really sure if it matters that much whether you have a man or a woman. But I will tell you, the group of people who knew that it mattered and who insisted that this move forward and helped us every step of the way, it was Henry Hyde from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
It was Chris
mm-hmm.
Smith from New Jersey. It was Bob Dornan from California. It was those guys that didn't have women flanking them to back them up when people said they were misogynist. So it was a tough thing to convince, and also probably equally difficult to convince were sort of the infrastructure, the Republican infrastructure within the Beltway in D.C., who thought, number one, pro-life wouldn't necessarily be their center of gravity, but number two, nobody's going to give to that. This is not going to work, meaning there's just not a money appeal for what you're doing. Pro-lifers, the grassroots pro-lifers, were the ones who really got it the most.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they got it the most?
I think that, because we're the ones who've suffered. We're the ones who've been on the front line. We've been in the abortion clinics, seen that woman to woman very often is a healing moment. It's a moment of heart-to-heart talk. I know where you've been. I know where you could be. I could be in the same place that you are. And I know that you will be a much more joyful person if you affirm life. I think that that's, the closer you are to the reality of abortion, the more you understand that there is a complementarity between men and women, and that to have women involved and have women advocating is really an important, vital piece of how we actually, you know, take back from the liberal feminists from the 60s and 70s our ability to speak for ourselves and take back the whole ideology, or set it aside, that says that you cannot be fulfilled unless you have the right to abortion.
By the way, I mean, you know, Marjorie and I have talked about this before, but, you know, the difference between a pro-life organization that advocates and educates in terms of the dollar amount that you need to raise to do that effectively versus using money for electing people, that is, to participate in as an outside group, an independent group, in the electoral process, that costs a lot more money, does it not, Marjorie?
It does, unfortunately. It is the price of doing business these days. It doesn't have to be the highest price. It doesn't have to match necessarily the other side, because our strength has always been our grassroots, who do everything for free and will do it all day long.
Right.
But it is big. It is unfortunately big money business, and to buy an ad, to do all the things, to hire workers, to cover an entire state like North Carolina or Arkansas or Louisiana, like we're going to be doing, to cover an entire state.
Well, don't jump over that for just a second. Let's go back to, say, North Carolina.
Yeah.
What will you be doing in North Carolina between now and 2014? And and give our listeners, because they probably don't know, just what these kinds of advertising, billboards, radio, TV, what do these things actually cost?
Well, first I'll say this is all integrated around one thing, and that is to pass legislation, a particular piece right now that's taken off on the state level, that will
in North Carolina.
Well, it's already passed there, but on the federal level, this is all a federal strategy to take a stand at least at one place, and that's the 20-week pain-capable bill, at least at that place as a beginning. We need to go further, but that's it. So
now, wait,
North Carolina.
Anyone who hasn't heard what that bill is, give them a brief explanation of what that bill is.
At 20 weeks, which is about halfway through pregnancy, it's a little bit under 5 months, a child can feel pain. This is a scientific fact. It's been proven.
Now, does everybody acknowledge that? All sides?
The other side argues against it, but they have sort of stopped doing that because they're a little bit on weak ground. They realize it's not working.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Scientists on all sides see this. And, I mean, even if you look, there's some of it. It's just visual. If you put a probe in, the child recoils away. I mean, there's just some of it that is just instinctive, and it's also scientifically proven. All the data is out there. And it's also just humane. It's a humane place to choose.
Yeah, this Hippocrates, right.
Yes. this point in pregnancy is developed into this is the marker. And there's a bill. This bill has been passed or something like it at 20 weeks in 13 states around the country. And we took this same bill to the House of Representatives with our women, passed it there overwhelmingly. Lindsey Graham is the author of this bill in the Senate, 40 co-sponsors so far. It really is a wildfire. It is really on fire, this piece of legislation, and it really will save human lives.
Well, that kind of anticipates one question I was going to ask you, and that is, and I don't mean to lose the trail of describing the work of your organization and what it costs. So this is really the most, you might say, effective program going or effort in the pro-life movement nationally?
It is integrated, yeah. I mean, yes. Why do we choose that? It will save lives. Why do we choose elections as a place of focus, why will we spend $1 million in North Carolina to beat Kay Hagan? Because we only need 6 more senators to pass this piece of legislation, which will actually save the lives of human beings, at least at that place. That is at least the beginning. So the reason we make the decisions that we do is that there's only one measure, and it is how quickly can we save the most number of lives given the resources that we have. In 3 states, we plan to spend a little over or a little under $1 million to win Senate races that will put us in an advantageous position in the U.S. Senate, where this bill is already on fire, to pass it in the same way the partial birth abortion ban passed before. We may have to do this twice. We may have to do it even 3 times. But it is the beginning, and the first time since Roe v. Wade, that there would be an actual point in the life of the unborn child, past which we say no more. And it's not enough, but it's the beginning.
So how many states have passed this so far?
13 states.
When will they go into effect, these new laws?
Well, in most states they're under effect. The only state that it's not is in Arizona, because it's a very liberal it was enjoined there and challenged, and the Supreme Court did not hear it there. But that's the only place where it is not in effect.
So in 12 states, this law banning abortion after 20 weeks is already in effect.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And this must be having a huge impact on Planned Parenthood.
Oh, yes, indeed. They see this as that easy yarn, that the more you pull, the sweater becomes completely broken up, and you won't have the abortion right anymore. And they're right. They're right to worry about it, because what we're focusing on is pre-viability. We're not talking about if the baby is born, they'll live, because probably they won't at 20 weeks. We're saying that the humanity of the unborn child is affirmable at 20 weeks, 2 weeks before viability, yes. And also can feel pain, just like you and me. We shouldn't do that. We should do no harm, and we should save that person's life. So the passage of this all over the state, and then the really spectacular veto of this in West Virginia that just occurred, is bringing tons of attention to this. In West Virginia, it was passed overwhelmingly in a bipartisan way in the House and the Senate in West Virginia. And then the so-called pro-life Democratic governor vetoed the bill, which has really shaken up the hornet's nest in a tragic but helpful way.
Why tragic?
Tragic because he is just now in West Virginia, you can have an abortion up until birth. That's tragic. However, the attention brought to it, I think, will end up, we're working very hard. We hope that we can get a veto session. I don't know that it's very difficult to do in West Virginia, but in any case, eventually we pray that they will. But it points to why this is so vital on the national level. This is embraced by young people, every demographic, women more than men, everybody. This is just a consensus place, and it puts the other side on the defense. So in places, in these Senate races, this is why we would choose the strategy that we do. We, in order to pass this on the national level, we need to do 2 things. It's a modest proposal. We need a new president, and we also need a handful more senators to pass it. It's very, very doable.
And so it's doable to get this as federal legislation.
That's right. It's very doable.
What's the possibility of getting it? How many states would this pass in if you were to do a full court press of all 50 states?
Well, it would pass, I don't know, I think we could do it, we could probably pass it in as many states at least as the partial birth abortion ban was passed, and that was 30. And when you start to get up into the 30, you are a public witness to the Supreme Court, that the nation
right.
is asking for something. The court is already in a posture where it is looking at Kennedy, the swing justice there on which everything seems to hinge these days, has already said in other cases that viability is not necessarily the only place where the government has an interest in protecting life. It's not just at viability. So this has to be a national standard. It has to be. Because we have to be a nation that stands for something. And we have to, and it also needs to be the beginning. I mean, we're not going to stop there.
I read that, I think, on Life News, that the number of clinics run by Planned Parenthood nationwide is at an all-time low or something like that? Is that correct?
It is true. That is exactly right. And, you know, as wonderful as that is, they're also consolidating into these mega clinics as well. So when we start to see true abortion numbers, which we really don't have very well, when we see those true numbers start to decline, I'll celebrate more about the decline in numbers of Planned Parenthood clinics. You're right. They are in a defensive posture. We can thank that fight on the federal level, and we can thank the fights on the state level and all the heroes that have been putting
that
on. Yeah,
like states like Texas.
We can thank them as well.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm talking with Marjorie Dannenfeltzer, who is the founder and the president of the very effective, very vital Susan B. Anthony List, headquartered in Washington, but with nearly 400,000 members from all over the country. How do your members participate in helping Susan B. Anthony List?
You know, the best part of how we operate is that every member in the country can have a say in who gets elected, no matter where they are. In other words, we put out a big spreadsheet of all the people that we have endorsed all over the country. And they're great heroes. Remember, they might be from Iowa, they might be from Louisiana. But every person in the country can donate small, big, whatever they can. And then we do what's called bundling. All those checks come back to us. We bundle them in a packet, and we send it to that candidate. And you should hear the comments that we get back from those candidates that receive those $1, $2, $5, $500, whatever dollar checks from all over the country.
Right.
The amount of money that is fabulous. It means that you can raise much more money than you could just as an individual PAC.
It was kind of like the original crowdfunding.
Yes,
kind of thing.
Exactly that. It is, and it's beautiful. And they also feel the support and love, and a lot of people put notes in there to these candidates encouraging them. So that is my number one favorite form of participation. But then also legislative battles, and really the number one legislative battle now is on the 20-week fetal pain bill. Getting actively involved in that through our website is where the pressure is going to come, through our website and then through, you know, other lobbying opportunities also. But that's the most active way that you can be engaged in really making a difference on the national level. And then in the states where we have races, where we are in North Carolina and Louisiana and Arkansas, we are recruiting volunteers every single day. We are desperate for volunteers to help win these Senate races for life.
Well, then stop right there, and people who are hearing this show might want to say, well, I'm interested. How would they get in touch with you and Susan B. Anthony List?
I'm going to give you the phone number.
Okay.
Because that's probably the best place.
Say it twice, okay. So everybody will get it. Go ahead.
202-223-8073. So it's 202-223-8073. I mean,
and just say you heard Marjorie Dannenfeltzer on the radio and that you're interested in the work of Susan B. Anthony, and surely one of your wonderful staff members will take good care of that call.
Oh, you bet. Oh, you should be well careful.
Because you do have a very welcoming organization, a very effective one, a very happy one, which is kind of unusual in Washington, D.C. And you get the job done. Now, I have been in Washington, of course, now 18 or so years, and I've watched your work since you began, and I've watched the esteem of members of Congress toward your work just rise and rise and rise to the point where if a member of Congress needs help or a candidate needs help as a pro-life member of Congress or pro-life candidate, they come to the Susan B. Anthony list. And that's quite an achievement. Even, I mean, it is 22 years old, but still, this is a hard town to break into.
Well, if you are out there actually helping elect the heroes, and you sustain the blows like the people on our staff do, you end up being friends with the people who are in those fights, because there are frankly not a whole lot of people doing it. Definitely not in the pro-life movement, and certainly not on the federal level. And they know that there's only one standard: that you be authentically pro-life, and that you and everything that goes along with that, which means articulate. It means that you also, if you're a candidate, you know how to run a campaign. And we will be your ally, and we will stick with you. We can't help everybody. What we do is we help the group of people, a small enough group of people, that we can have high impact in those places. So it is very exciting. And frankly, no one who is the person we want to hang around with loves politics per se.
Right.
So, I mean,
we know that politics is a necessary, not an evil, but a necessary, very difficult task.
Yes. And it's highly rewarding, and it's conceived by the founders. And I of late have taken a lot of solace, and I bet you have too, from the fact that this was given to us. This was this whole process, this institution of democracy, in the particular way that it was crafted, set the pro-life movement up for a very important moment. And that moment is using all those tools that they gave us to address the most fundamental human rights abuse
in human history.
Certainly right now.
I'm talking with Marjorie Dannenfelter, founder and president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Please remain with us after this short message.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Our individual and corporate relationship with our Lord, our relationship with the church, the precepts of the church, our relationship with the world and the culture that surrounds us. Father John Ricardo discusses these things and more, all from the Catholic perspective, on Christ is the Answer. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
As Christians, we are taught that what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart. And in Ephesians, it reads, "No bad word should come from your mouth, but only what is good and edifying, that it may give grace to those who hear." If you want to have a clean mouth without having to use soap, start by cleansing the heart. Think back to those various points in life when the anger that festered inside eventually percolated up and right out of your mouth with words of hate for people who have hurt you, offended you, lied to you, used you, abused you, stole from you, or perhaps altered your life forever. When we hold on to the past, we cloud the love of Jesus Christ, and what emerges is the pain inflicted on us from mankind. If you find yourself cursing, spewing hateful words about others, or often negative about life, then close your mouth and open your heart. Fill it with the love of our Lord and let His words emerge from your mouth. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, the communication evangelist.
I'm talking with Marjorie Dannenfelter, president and founder of the Susan B. Anthony List, about the organization's unique work in the pro-life movement, that is, in actually moving voters toward certain pieces of legislation and moving voters toward certain candidates. Marjorie, you talked about this 20-week bill and how it's going to be maybe is going to create a kind of paradigm shift in the anti-abortion movement going forward. Is this something that's an imminent change? I mean, is this something that people should get onto right now, educate themselves, and find some place to play a role?
We are a couple of breaths away. This is so within our reach to place our marker halfway through pregnancy. To say beyond that, no more. There's a place where we'll say, right now we are one of seven nations that has no limit as a nation. We have no limit up until birth. Well, some states do, but our nation, as a nation, takes no stand. And this is so well within our reach. And public opinion is one thing. Measures of public opinion are fabulous and are very helpful, but they're only really as helpful as it reflects what can be done in reality, meaning a law must be passed. A law must be passed to do this, and a law cannot be passed unless we have lawmakers who will argue and pass it.
I would imagine that the pro-choicers, they call themselves pro-choice, of course, pro-abortion members of Congress would be really scared of this bill because it's based on science. It's not based on any kind of wishful thinking, right?
They are very, very concerned. Where we're seeing this level of concern is we've seen it on the floor of the House of Representatives. We see it by Senator Harry Reid refusing to allow this for a vote, so we've got to go to tricky means to try to get a vote on this. We see it on the campaign stump, where our candidates now being trained to talk about this and articulate and common sense about it. The other side now is on the defense. We're not talking just about your rape and incest exception. We're talking about their opposition to protecting children after halfway through pregnancy. Halfway, almost 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't want to talk about that. And to see that means it means two things. It means that we can gain ground politically, means that we can actually have a sane conversation where their bill is actually going to be passed, not in some ethereal world where we want to harm women.
Right.
But it is so within our grasp. And we, in the past, I'll just say this, Jill, this is the first time in the life of the Susan B. Anthony list that we have had our sole focus be one piece of legislation. And I don't mean that we don't help where we can in other ways. We do. But because we know that there are 18,000 children that die after that point every year, at least, and we know that it's within our grasp to save them, we're going to do it. And we're going to put...
Well, also, you also see that this can work. It's a winning strategy. It's passed in 13 states. And if
that's
it would,
right.
There's no reason why, I suppose, except for Democratic Party leadership, that it wouldn't pass Congress. But surely the present president would veto it. What do you think?
Surely he will. I mean, he'll come up with a reason. He'll come up. He'll echo some of the hollow reasons that are being cast out when we saw this debate in the House of Representatives. You're going to let women die because you won't give them the abortion they need, right? Well. There's all sorts of hollow, false arguments.
Right.
And then also, if your child has a disability, especially a profound disability, then it's not you should have every right to abort at any point in pregnancy up until birth. So those two, the disability issue and then the health of the mother, utterly false issue, are the two things. And that's not really a lot to hang everything on. I mean, everybody out there can argue about both and do a very good job of defeating them on those grounds. They're just such on weak ground, and they're losing in state after state after state after state.
I think what the listener – I'm going to predict what the listener is thinking right now listening to this interview with you, Marjorie Dannenfeldt, Susan B. Anthony, and that is that here we are, halfway through the second term of President Obama, who has effectively nullified most, if not all, of what was gained on the life side during the previous two administrations of George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And there must be a kind of a perception in most people's minds that the pro-life movement has suffered greatly at the hands of this president and this particular time of the Senate being controlled by the party that is